Pushaw.
I hit it.
Oh, you hit your button, didn't you?
Yes.
You little button pusher, you.
Everything you say can and will be recorded and used against you.
Good. You didn't get my reference? You Fargan cork suckers.
No. What's that?
You ever seen Johnny Dangerously?
I don't think so.
Oh, classic 80s Michael Keaton, like spoofing the old mob movies. And the guy who tries to kill him in that movie always goes, "Ah, you Fargan cork suckers."
Funny. Yeah, I think I missed that one.
You missed that one?
I was probably getting laid, dude.
Whoa. I mean, it was the late 80s. So from my understanding, you were in leather pants on cocaine having sex.
Yeah.
That is what I imagine. So I looked something up. I looked something up that comes up in the interview, okay? Just so we know. We were wondering early on in the interview, what was it? Elon Musk was worth, you know, cool 200 bill or so, 220 bill.
Yes.
And I looked it up and it does look like nearly half the world's countries are worth less than Elon Musk.
Yes.
For the most part, it looks like the bulk of Africa, instead of, you know, leaving out maybe two or three countries, the bulk of South America, leaving out seems to be only Brazil.
So you're saying he could buy Argentina?
The bulk of Central Europe. Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, it looks like he could. I mean, he could. If you take South Africa out of the mix, he could just buy sub-Saharan Africa. Not to say you can buy a country based on their GDP, which is what I'm looking up. But I mean, that is phenomenally insane. Is it not? Like, I just said, what are we going to do about that, Brad?
I mean, at some point, one of these guys is going to buy an island somewhere and make an army of fucking mercenaries, right? That will be able to then do his
Here's
bidding.
An interesting thing. I heard an interview with someone who was a psychologist to the ultra rich. It was like a really bizarre thing, but his specialty was being a shrink to the ultra rich because they have such a unique position in life that I guess only him and the other ultra rich could understand it. And apparently one of the biggest fears that these people had was, how do we still yield power and influence when money doesn't mean anything? So they're really thinking so far ahead, like right now in the current context of things, yes, I can buy an island. I can buy people to protect me on this island. But if the shit really hits the fan, the entire monetary system is out.
Right.
It's gone. Your money doesn't mean anything if it's really like post-apocalyptic. So one of their biggest fears, instead of like doomsday prepping their weird, you know, underground bunkers and stuff, is like, how do we still manipulate the poor to work for us when money doesn't mean anything, essentially? God. How do we get them to still fight and die for us without money? You know, that's an interesting concept, you know? How do you? Maybe. The only other way is back in the day, brute fucking force, right?
Just give it up. You will have been toppled and your head will have been sliced from your body, my friend.
Wait, what am I giving up? What do I have to give
up? I'm talking to Elon Musk. He doesn't need to worry because his head will have been removed from his body by those below him.
He's living like Krang at this point. It would be fun. Man, that was such an excellent conversation. Ryan, I've known for a while. Now, we didn't talk about it in here. Maybe we'll talk about it in part two. But when Gaslight was first coming up, the first record we did, Sink or Swim, like leaked. And it got out early. And some of the people it leaked to were Ryan and his guy Jake at Vice.
Oh, really?
That's right. And he was in a band called Dear Tonight, and we got connected that way. And they're the ones who at the time were doing some stuff with Against Me, and they put together a show in the city with Against Me and put us on the show. that kind of put us on the radar of, like, you know, Jordan at Sabbath, and, you know, probably subsequently got us on that, you know, Against Me New Wave tour, which was our first big tour. So those guys had, you know, were way early on into, like, what was going on with Gaslight and Help Me Out. And then, you know, through the years, like, Vice blows up and, you know, reconnect with Ryan, and he's putting out these amazing, like, you know, he's like on Nat Geo, he's on Netflix, he's on Vice, he's traveling the world, and he's like, you know, yeah, like, turned into this really cool Anthony Bourdain-ish sort of character. Yeah. He's going to these interesting corners of the world, and you know, it's such a fascinating life he's chosen. And
well, he's good at it, you know.
Yeah, he's good at it, and he articulates it well, and he's just an interesting guy to talk to and listen to. And fairly recently, we've kind of reconnected within the last year, and we talk about it at the end. He's the only person I do this with. We have a communication relationship where we've been writing these epically grand texts to each other, like, once every couple weeks or like a month. So we're treating texts like emails, or almost like pen paling, you know, in text form, in the way we used to. Like,
that's what my parents think. They think that texts are emails, and they send me ones that are so big I have to scroll through them on my phone.
I mean, I kind of do too, especially in the time sensitive nature of texts. It's like, as long as as long as I write you back eventually, I do think it's okay. But some people are like, dude, like, why did it take you so long to write back? I'm like, well, because you texted me at like 9 at night. I decided my phone is going to go away at 7 tonight so I can actually use my brain. Sorry. You know, like, remember the days where if you used to call somebody at their home after 10 o'clock, it basically meant an emergency was happening.
Yeah, man.
Like, if your phone rang after 10, like, that uh-oh.
Loud bell. Diddling, yeah. Diddling.
Like, oh, God.
Ouch.
It's 10:30. Either someone is really fucking up and going to get yelled at, or something awful happened. You know? So we got to turn these things off every once in a while, you know?
Hell yeah.
I didn't even realize, man, I started this habit in the last few months of kind of like listening to podcasts to go to sleep again.
Really?
Or, you know, yeah, or listening to like a stand-up or listening to a podcast or just something to, I guess, distract my attention. Maybe right. I was depressed or getting dark or something. And you know, the last couple nights I've been making it a point to stay away from it, keep it away from me in the morning when I get up. And man, just automatically I feel more clear. I really do. Like, it's these things, they kind of incrementally take a little larger hold of you as you go. And like, the better the technology gets and the more apps you put on and the more things you're functioning through this phone, and it kind of takes away larger pieces of you as you go if you don't pay attention, you know?
Hell yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Well, that is a non sequitur. Ryan is a professional who would never let a segue like that happen. So all that being said, let's get into the train and part of this story. And potentially, I think this has to be part one of a part two, because we got a lot more to get into here. It's going on track! So I imagine you on like very important Zoom calls with like lots of different like fake tanned like California faces mapping out the next like mega TV production. Am I wrong?
You're wrong only in that the construction of your sentence has built in contradictions or question, as it were. I don't know that there are very important Zoom calls. There are people in this world who do important shit. I'm sure. I think I know a couple of them. They don't use Zoom very much.
Oh, okay. So this whole Zoom thing, it's got a floor, huh?
It's got a floor. Idiots like me. You are devastatingly right in the sense that 90% of my day is Zoom calls with people talking about completely made up processes
right.
and bullshit make work to justify our jobs and our existence. And if we want to get really existential, our lives, our purpose. I mean, I don't know how big we want to go
right
on our first
question. Staring right back at you in your computer screen.
So let me ask you a question about your Zoom life then, because I've noticed that, you know, thankfully I don't have to do a lot of Zoom calls. I did one today that was kind of important and I had to like think about where to actually do it from to see how it would come off. But I have noticed that the people that I have Zoom called regularly that, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, like just about anywhere went. And then the ones that had to do it a lot, they kind of like, they sorted some shit out. I noticed people's backgrounds became very well thought out and very staged.
Mm-hmm.
Did you make a conscious decision about like when you Zoom today, do you have a spot?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're asking me about this because I actually have a lot of thoughts. Here's my macro thought. We should stop this collectively as a society. There's nothing wrong with phones. They served us for many, many years prior to a global pandemic. And we are now, the Zoom has overstayed its welcome. That's my hot take on Zooms. I don't need to see you. I really don't. I can't see you guys right now. And it's right. Completely fine.
I can tell by your voice that you have a sly grin on right now.
Like, yeah.
I don't
know. And isn't there some charm in leaving something to the imagination? But I really honestly do think, and here's the actual reason why. I do think generally things have opened up and I've had more in-person meetings and coffees, and even if offices are still closed, I think people are wanting to, you know, have a yeah. patio coffee or sandwich and we can discuss there if it's really a face-to-face thing. And if it's not, and this is, God, a very uninteresting anecdote, but, holy shit. Everyone has turned this episode off. I'm a walker. I'm a pacer. I can't sit stationary.
I feel and you on I, that. Yeah.
Dude, my brain doesn't work. I'm not thinking as clearly. Like I'm a runner and I do most of my like actual creative thinking, not my Zoom bullshit, but like the actual substance. Unlike my evening runs, like that's just my, there's a direct connection in the wiring in my body between my brain and whatever endorphins get released by physical exercise.
Yeah.
So during the day, I would rather, if I'm going to be on a conference call or whatever, I'd rather, you know, take my dogs for a walk or just move around the neighborhood or whatever. And just being stapled to my desk so I can stare blankly at someone's elaborate Zoom background and compliment their book collection seems completely inane to me.
How long until we can just put like a cyber proxy in there? Like you can still go on your run, you know, listen and then speak, and your cyber proxy is actually like in the actual Zoom.
Well,
this is
probably
coming. Come on.
You gotta know
somebody.
You're setting the bar too low, homie. The question is, how long until Elon figures out a way that none of us are doing any of this? We're just thinking. We're just thinking,
right.
And you're hearing my thoughts.
Yes.
And all of this artifice of human communication is fallen by the wayside. By the way, I want to be clear on that. I think that's fucking dystopian and terrifying. And I don't know that it's a great idea.
No,
but
it's
do think that's what Neuralink is, right? Isn't that what he's working on?
I thought it was, from my I mean, a completely unskilled opinion on something like this. I thought it was more like to neurologically control your actual functions around you, you know, like computer on in your head and then like typing in your head. I didn't know that this was the actual communication between people without words. I guess that's the next logical step though, right?
Yeah, I was going to say it's kind of a slippery slope once you open the door to it, right? But I don't know. I do think that the actual, I know nothing about what I'm talking about right now. But I do think that the more immediate utility to the whole neurological chip implant world is like actually helping victims of strokes or people who have lost mobility or some utility in their limbs regain that, which is obviously fucking great. I think
that's the dress they'll put on it to sell it to us at first.
That's the Trojan horse that they get it into our lives. Yeah. And then all of a sudden,
then all of a sudden, like some cyber version of Elon is like, it's 10 o'clock. Time for sleep, and then I just shut down or something like that. Like that's probably step three.
I know.
That.
I feel like I'd feel better about it if he wasn't such a fucking cartoon clown.
He's too rich. What I mean? Yeah, he's too rich and too exuberant about what he's doing. That it does have a real like Lex Luthor kind of feel, doesn't it?
Did you see the new fucking Forbes billionaire list that came out this week or last week or something?
Not my normal periodical of note. But was he well number one above?
Yeah, he's number one. It's been Bezos for the last few years, as you can tell. I'm an avid reader, aspirational reading.
Well, you were once on one of these lists, so I would take a look too if I was once on one of these lists.
Do you want to take a guess at his total net worth? This is a billionaire's list, so let's preface that it starts with a B, billion.
So does he still start with a B?
Yeah, yes. Oh, okay, fair question. He still starts with a B.
I didn't know if he made it to the T yet.
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna go like. You know, I know he's making like even like Steve Ballmer look bad. Let's go, I don't know, cool 300 billion?
Yeah, it's a pretty good fucking guess, dude. 219 billion.
Oh, wow.
It's so inconceivable. That is such an, I was going to say that's such an inconceivable amount of money. That's not even an amount of money. There should be a different vocabulary for it. We need like a new word. That's not even wealth. No. You're an alien. I don't know what that is.
That's like what the basketball players talk about when they're like, no, like we're rich. The people who own our teams are wealthy.
Yes.
Like we're not allowed in the clubs they're allowed, you know? Like it's still a totally different story, you know?
100%. Yes.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to my kids that like that amount of money, you can't, if you worked full time, like 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, like you couldn't spend it. Like you couldn't spend it. Even if you were like writing everybody you saw a huge check, you know, like you just couldn't get rid of the money. It's so much money that it just regenerates too quickly.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like there is, it seems so like, you know, you'll see people on Twitter every now and again, like looking at some report like this and drawing a direct line to like, you know, their pet cause, right? Whether it's homelessness or world hunger or, you know, electrical grid in sub-Saharan Africa, whatever the thing is, right? And you go like, oh, well, this asshole's worth $220 billion. It would take X, you know, million to, you know, fix my pet project, whatever. And you kind of go like, okay, come on. But the guy can't really actually, he's hit the point where I think he actually could just really like do a fucking straw poll of like the 10 worst problems in the ocean pollution and, you know, climate change and homelessness and, you know, starvation. I think we could knock like six or seven of them off the fucking list if this dude just started writing checks, no? Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Like, God. Like, I mean, he just bought 9% of Twitter for $3 billion, which, I mean, that's like a lunch.
As like a by the way, yeah, in the same way that I just bought a coffee.
Exactly. Yes. Like, that's the equivalent to his wallet of like filling up his tank, getting a coffee. And he just bought like 10% of a social media company that he hates.
I know, that's really interesting.
And is now
right?
going to do something creepy Lex Luthor shit to Twitter or like shut it down from the boardroom so he can start his own. Like, he's up to something, you know what
100%.
I mean?
100%.
And that's like toy money. That's like fuck around money, you know?
Also, like, my guy, how many companies do you need, right? Like, he's building these Hyperloops. He's obviously got Tesla. He's got the solar panel company that's a sister of Tesla. He's got SpaceX with the fucking rockets. Like, chill. Does he have more hours than I do? What's happening?
I think he does. Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, it's like, I think it's like what Wu-Tang did when they all went solo. You know, like, they all specifically took their albums to different labels so the Wu-Tang umbrella could take over the music industry.
Wow. Was that, have they said that in interviews that that was
yeah,
a purposeful?
They have. They have. They all went to different like subsects of different labels. And then apparently some of them will say they were, you know, like running guns up and down the East Coast. This is, listen, this leads into my question. This is the entrepreneurial spirit of the New Yorker and the New Jerseyite. You know, this is what we do. like you put us into hip hop, we're going to own hip hop. Yeah, this is how we do it. So this is my perfect segue, Ryan, into the fact that, you know, you've been filmed for many years, you know, living out in California and doing the thing like that. But I think it's probably lost on the people that you are from New Jersey. Proper
proudly.
New Jerseyite, right? Am I allowed to say that? Did I out you to the public, or are you still New Jerseyite?
It's super proud New Jerseyite. There's somewhere, I can't find it right now. Oh, it's on my wrist. I have a New Jersey tattoo on my wrist.
There you go. Me too.
Yeah, but
not on my wrist, but you gotta have one. You gotta be branded. Where did you actually grow up? Like, what part?
West Orange. It's Essex County. It's you know, 15 miles from Newark is kind of what people don't say, but it'll land you appropriately.
Home of Ian Ziering and Chris Gethard.
Yes, home of Chris Gethard, who went to my high school a couple years ahead of me.
Okay.
Also home to, oh God, there's some good ones. Not Ed Lover. The Dr. Dre, who, remember when there were two Dr. Dre's?
I do. The original from Yo MTV Raps.
Yes. Either Ed Lover or the Dr. Dre lived in West Orange up on Knollwood.
Okay.
Some guy named Thomas Edison had a lab there, but that's obviously less relevant to the culture we're consuming.
Yeah.
And then in and around West, there's like a blurry line between, I mean, there isn't. There's a border between South Orange and West Orange.
Yes.
But generally speaking, that is the neighborhood of Naughty by Nature and I believe most of the Fugees, although I couldn't tell you which.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
There
Naughty
you go.
By Nature one's a big one, but we do, huge. For the people, they should know that there are some serious delineations between West and South Orange and like East Orange. It changes a little.
It does. East Orange, especially. South Orange is a blurrier border.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there's Orange too. And perplexingly, I want to attribute this start of my OCD behavior to not being able to figure this out when I was like five. There's not a North Orange. And it drove me so fucking crazy as like a completionist little kid.
Yeah.
That they're just like, how did we miss? Was there one? And then we forgot about it. Did it get consumed into another one?
It's pretty funny. There is a New Brunswick, East Brunswick, South Brunswick, North Brunswick, no West.
So weird.
I've always wondered the same thing. I, you know, there, you track record the world. It was probably some shady shit. You know, like the one person who went to go do West, like, you know, got killed by someone, like something crazy happened. Oh, no more West. Or do you know
the
what
one
they did?
The person who went to go do West.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, don't go that way. You're going to run into this guy. And then you never got his town. Do you know in Patterson, sometime I believe in like the post mid 60s with the riots in a lot of the cities in New Jersey, Patterson changed West Patterson to Wynwood Park and
ooh.
East Patterson to Elmwood Park to try to take away the Patterson name and probably, you know, get middle class people to move back there and stuff. All these
I was going to say that's reminiscent of, I felt like after Jersey, I lived in New York for almost 20 years,
right?
17 years or something. And over the course of the nearly two decades that I lived in New York, I want to say that I didn't I lived basically in one neighborhood, but the name of that neighborhood on real estate sites changed four fucking times.
Were you in Williamsburg?
I was, but it was at Williamsburg and then Greenpoint towards the end, which was actually Greenpoint.
Williamsburg got really big.
Dude,
it's so big.
It basically, if you weren't in Manhattan, you were in Williamsburg for a few years there.
If
according
you dipped
to real
your toe
estate
in the
agents.
River, you were technically in Williamsburg.
Completely insane. I don't know if that sprawl continues to this day, but it was insane.
Yeah, I think it's, Brooklyn has pushed further and further out, where people got priced out of Williamsburg, priced out of Greenpoint, and then people just head farther and farther west until, some hipsters in Bay Ridge, and he's like, wait, what the fuck just happened? I'm too far out.
Well, dude, that's essentially what got, there's a few things that got me to LA, but a decent part of it was just exactly that trajectory, right? Yeah. Getting pushed and pushed and pushed to the point where you kind of wake up one day and you're just going okay, I'm still playing New York prices. New York is a distant skyline.
I'm in Long Island.
I'm not reaping any of the benefits of this insane cost of living premium that I'm paying. What am I doing?
It's pretty funny to observe. I have a family who has a rent control apartment in the Upper West Side from 1971. You know what I mean? It's absurd what they pay there, and when you see when you look at New York on a long timeline, you can never get mad because this is what New York does,
100%.
Where my grandparents grew up, where my grandparents worked is now NYU. You know what I mean? It's now the types of things you just got to let. I always get a little peckish when I hear New Yorkers getting super fucked up about their neighborhoods and things changing. New Yorkers who survive, they know how to survive. You got to adapt to all this stuff. It happens,
Well, and especially I share your aversion to that, even though I hope it didn't just sound like I was doing that. I accepted my fate readily. Cause I also think there is such a lack of self-awareness from the people who are normally banging that drum. Right. Cause up until a certain price point, when you got uncomfortable, you were the gentrifier.
Exactly.
Dude. It's not you who's being disenfranchised. It's the guy who had the bodega on the corner for the last 36 years that now, his landlord realized he can get a wine bar into that space for triple the rent you've been paying. That's the guy who gets fucked by the steamrolling of New York.
What do you think the actual rate should be? Give me actual hard years.
Years of what?
How long do you have to live there to be able to complain?
Oh, well, what's the you're an official New Yorker. I think it's after 10 years, right? That's was it Ed Koch who said that?
It's written in stone if Koch said it.
I'm pretty sure someone should fact check me.
Brad, did you become one?
When did I become a
when did you
New
like go like, okay, I'm officially a New Yorker now?
Ooh, that's a good
How
question.
How long did it take? Or was there a delineation? When you had kids there?
Probably not 10 years. I probably was such a fucking, maybe it was when I moved to LA for a year and hated it. And then I came back.
Really?
That's
cemented
a good marker.
Yeah.
I like that. Dude, I remember I first moved to New York when I was 18, actually, to go to NYU.
Right.
Although I'd been, NYU was almost just the vehicle, right? I fell in love with New York when I was 14.
Yeah, if you're West Orange, you're 20 minutes out for your entire life.
Path train to Harrison, and then you're going to Coney Island High.
That's
and that, right? So that was like, I moved to New York to be closer to Coney Island High. And like NYU was just a convenient excuse for my parents. Yeah,
pretty close to Coney Island High.
But dude, I remember the you know, we lived in dorms and like, whatever. I'm sure I pretended like I was comfortable with it, but like, it's one thing to go into New York for a night or a weekend when you're in high school or whatever. To live in New York at 18 years old, I was so out of my depths. I was so freaked out. Yeah, I was so unsure of myself. And the first time, it was probably like, you know, 2-3 weeks into school, you start getting into your routine and your pattern. And I'm walking down University Place, which is where my dorm was at NYU, to whatever morning lecture, class, whatever I was going to. And I just had gotten in this habit of stopping at this one particular like coffee bagel cart thing. And, you know, I'm a creature of habit. So I got pretty much the same thing every day. And I got to the front of the line and the guy looked at me and he handed me my order without me ordering.
That's
and
it.
I was like, this is it. I have arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're made now,
New
Hedry.
Yorker.
You're made now. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. As yeah. my mom always, because when I was growing up, you know, my parents are like super hardcore New Yorkers. And when I was growing up, I was like the anti-New York, New Jerseyite, because my brother, my sister, parents, whole family are from New York. So basically I was bombarded with like this, you know, anti-Jersey sentiment. It's one of the reasons I'm so pro-Jersey. And my mom used to always say, she's like, listen, the reason you hate it is because you've never had your neighborhood. She's like, you've never like, I know it feels big, but like when you're there, your two blocks is like your neighborhood and it turns into like a different thing and you find your community. And even living in Jersey City, I think she's right. Like,
yeah,
it does. Once you find your people and find your places, like it gets a lot smaller, right? And a lot less daunting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the thing, Brad. I'm interested in your experience living in LA for a year. I think the people who spent time in New York who try to do the LA thing, and I'll be honest, I'm still struggling with it. It's the neighborhood thing that it doesn't translate in LA because it's a car culture, because it's spread out, because it's this weird city that's kind of hollow in the middle. It's really just a collection of suburbs. Like, was that what you hated about it, Brad? That it just didn't feel like it had a neighborhood?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely missed like walking out the door and having life hit you in the face, which never happens in LA. It has to be planned. Also, though, you know, I was there under bad conditions. I basically went from like a guy who couldn't pay for a drink below 14th Street to like a nobody in LA to watch my, you know, I basically went out there to watch my band fall apart. And classic. So I was in a hurry to get back. And
classic story.
Back to where the girls knew who the fuck
Ryan
was.
Just got a new documentary idea. The Goops go to LA to fall apart.
Yeah.
With Brad. I love it. So did you go straight from, you know, you're a journalism student at NYU, did you go straight into Vice?
Yeah. My sophomore year in college, I didn't even wait. I had this advice. I mean, NYU, you know, it's fine. I'm really glad I went to NYU, but I was joking before about like it was a means more than an end. But in a lot of respects, it was. New York was the vessel that got me to New York.
I mean, so you really just NYU wanted was to the get vessel. To the city. Right.
Yeah. And then I had this advisor my sophomore year at NYU. I still remember his name, Patrick McCreary.
What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's up, Pat? I'm sure he's an avid listener.
Probably.
But he was super smart. He said to me, like, look, man, you're paying a premium to go to NYU, and that's fine. It's a good school, you know, you're getting some good instruction, you get some good professors. He's like, what you're really paying for is the city that surrounds you. Mm. And the reason that is valuable is because you can get internships and you can get life experience that exceeds what NYU can.
Wow, that's
really suggestive.
That's some excellent wisdom at that age, yeah.
Dude, and of course, my dumbass was like too, you know, I talk about it now and it all fits into my little narrative really cleanly. But like at the time, you're resistant to that idea because you're like, well, hold on. I just moved to New York City and you want me to spend my time working for free? Because at the time, internships were unpaid.
And you still have parents and things. Like, that's not an easy sell, right?
Dude, it was not a totally easy sell. Super smart in hindsight. But at the time, I kind of bucked up against it a little bit.
Sure.
So I basically, my answer to it, to like justify, I was like, look, if I'm going to work for free, I'm going to do it at my favorite magazine and that's it. And if they won't have me, then I'm not doing this
so
shit.
So Vice was already like that well-established shit talking rag kicking
Vice
around.
Had moved down from Vice was, it's a Canadian magazine. Right. At the time it was just a magazine, but it was started in 1994 in Montreal and it had moved down to New York City in 99. Mm-hmm. I graduated high school in 2000 and moved into New York. So it was about 2 years into the New York era of Vice. And it was just, you know, it was that free magazine that you found at skate shops.
I just remember it making
record stores.
That's why the Vice thing was amazing to me. Cause like at a certain point I was like, oh wait, that magazine who like talks shit about people's clothes, like has TV. Like, wait, what's going on?
Dude,
because I'm not the most hip person. So I was like, wait, what happened? I used to think they were just kind of mean. Now that's like a news channel. These are guys who, like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's not even just that they made TV. It's that they made like news, right?
Yeah, like hard hitting news. Yeah, like.
And you're exactly right. Like they rose to prominence on the back of like cocaine jokes and mean-spirited fashion commentary. Right, and then all of a sudden it's like today in the front lines of the conflict in Yemen. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So were you part of that transition? Like, did you see it happen?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my era there. I was holding on for dear life, but, but yeah, I got there. I basically, you know, showed up knocking on the door, asking to intern. They took pity on me and took me in. And I hung out basically for the last 2 years of NYU. I finished school, just interned throughout. And interning at that time, I think both the kind of premise of interning, like it wasn't as structured. It was just kind of a place I went. And then Vice itself was also like, it was 12 people in a warehouse. Like, we shared it with 555 Soul.
Shit.
So it was just like my job was basically like to get in arguments with the 555 Soul office manager and be like, hey, your salvage denim is actually, we need that space for our box of magazines. So like, how do we work this out? Like that was essentially it. But then I graduated NYU in 04 and started Vice full time, pretty much the day I graduated, and that I pure luck just happened to be kind of a moment in kind of laying the pipes for the online video revolution that was just starting to kind of gurgle there.
Sure.
And, you know, we had some early experiments with it, and had this little joint venture with MTV that they funded called VBS, Vice Broadcasting System.
I don't remember that. Yeah.
Good. Let's keep it that way. It was brutal.
Okay. Don't Google it.
we made an MTV show that nobody watched called The Vice Guide to Everything.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
and that was that. So that was around like 2007, 2008. And again, it wasn't like I just happened to be there, right? Like I raised my hand. The company was a magazine company that all of a sudden was about to start doing a bunch of video for the internet and then for this MTV show and otherwise. And nobody knew how to do it. It's not like I was good at it. I think I just raised my hand faster than...
Who was really like driving that pivot, like inside the office?
It was the there was three guys who started Vice, and one of them was a guy called Shane Smith, who ended up on the HBO show and you know, did a lot of it himself. He was the one. They each had their own. There was a unique marriage, the three of them coming together, and two of them, you know, are still associated with the company. One is not. But they each kind of had their own purview. One was kind of a content guy, one was a music guy, and one was kind of, you know, this was Shane, the kind of the business guy, mm-hmm. right? The guy who saw just around the bend a little bit, right? That trite phrase in business sure. that I do actually attribute to Shane.
I think I heard that on a Zoom call.
Yeah. Oh, God. A devastating little bird. You're totally right. But he was. I mean, to say it in more plain-spoken terms, he just was a little bit smarter than the rest of us, right? Yeah. He was the guy who knew that online video was coming, and he sure. was the guy who not only knew that it was coming, but he was the guy who saw this void in news and news for sure. young people in particular, and he had the audacity to say, you know, this magazine that, you know, made fun of people's sneakers and, right. and had cocaine jokes can actually, you know, go to conflict zones and report back in a way that feels a little less detached and soapboxy than I think a lot of things did at the time. Huh.
Do you think the inspiration for that, like, was, you know, more morally founded? Like, there was a vacuum in the news, there are things we want to tell, or was it more of just like more of a capitalistic idea? Like, I think this will work and this will sell.
That's a really great question, Benny. I don't know that I've totally thought about it in those terms. It's a mix of both. And that's, I mean, Shane himself is a mix of both those things,
right.
Which I think was his unique skill set. I do think, I know it's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but I do think it was both. I think the unique thing about Vice, and it's changed now, but for the time I was there, was the same guys who founded it in 1994 in Montreal, who at that time were 20, 21-year-old kids who were concerned mostly with drugs and jokes and music and girls, were the same guys who were running it in 2008, 2009, when we were launching all these news initiatives.
Right.
So there actually is this like thing that I'm sure all of us, all three of us have experienced, which is like this natural maturation of your own interest and this this way you look back on the things that you thought were important at 20 and 21, and you kind of cringe and you just become kind of a broader, you know, citizen of the world.
Yeah.
God, I hate that. but you know what I mean? So I do think it was authentic to where they were in their lives. And I'm sure there was also some business calculation, and there was some idea that like, well, it's weird that young people are getting their news from John Stewart, right? Or right. whatever, right?
Yeah,
there was that
sure.
thing that was happening in news where kind of there was a changing of the guard, and there was this real thirst, desire, need, whatever, for sources that spoke like John Stewart did, you know, with the Daily Show in a more conversational way, and kind of broke the conventions of traditional news.
Daily Show was really like super groundbreaking, huh? Like, it really changed the whole game.
I don't think it's weird, right? Because like, this gets said about bands a lot, right?
right.
But I think it's true here, which is like, if you are white hot and revolutionary, and then your band implodes and breaks up, and the legend of your band almost exceeds what your band ever could have become.
Yeah,
right?
Uh-huh. Sex Pistols have one album, you know?
Yeah.
Right, like, right.
Yeah.
Whereas I think The Daily Show, because it continued on in all of these other iterations, and that's not even a knock on it. I think Trevor Noah does a great job with it. But I just don't know that particular transformative era of the John Stewart-led Daily Show gets the credit that maybe it deserves as like a transformational
right.
force, because it's still with us.
Yeah.
It's still, so I can watch it tonight.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But you do think it had that kind of impact, like completely switched gear for how people, was it more how people want to receive news? Like,
yeah, the Daily Show, right? Yeah, not Vice. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, I just want to make sure it doesn't sound like I'm blowing smoke on my own ass. yeah, I do think the Daily Show, I really do think that. And I think it's a couple things, right? I think it's one just about the actual, you know, the thing that Vice was a part of that is similar to the Daily Show was the proliferation of information across a bunch of different channels, right? Like, you know, it is no longer CBS, ABC, NBC. Not that that's what it was. You know, obviously we had cable, we had early internet stuff and blah, blah, blah. But there were still gatekeepers. There were still these centralized nodes of power and information. I think, you know, the wave of the internet certainly just kind of knocked down a lot of those barriers. And obviously the Daily Show was a cable program, not an internet platform, but I think it benefited greatly from Jon Stewart being really funny and really kind of economical in the way he delivered information in a way that really fit the medium, right? The online medium. And clips like that would get shared and people would find something online and then come to the cable show, and that whole kind of ecosystem just kind of grew out of that. And then I also think it's about Jon Stewart in particular and the way he delivered it. I do think that there was, even to this day, there's this ongoing debate within, you know, traditional mostly newspaper channels, but extends elsewhere about the idea of objectivity versus subjectivity. We're now talking about this concept of moral clarity. This was a hot button debate during the Trump years of, you know, do you get to say, or should you say, Donald Trump lied when he said X, Y, Z, right? Or do you need to take that more passive traditional news reporting voice that doesn't have a point of view?
Like, I think what is the responsibility of the news in that moment?
Yes,
definitely came to a crossroads. Yeah,
100%. It was one of the many forced crises of the Trump years. Was this question of like, what do we want from the Fourth Estate? What do we want from journalism? Does it hold power to account? Does it call balls and strikes, or does it just report the news? And I think Stewart, you know, ushered in an era where we all got comfortable with the idea that the news reporters, even the Koppels and the Rathers and the more kind of staid traditional anchors, they are not cyborgs. They are not robots. They do not exist in a vacuum of opinion, and they have them. And so the question just becomes, do they tell you what they are? Do they share their biases with you?
Right.
Or do they try and hide them under this veil of kind of, you know, objectivity, which I think increasingly people think is kind of a foolhardy pursuit, right?
Right. That's crazy. Well, I love his new podcast too. I don't know if you've heard it. Jon Stewart's back. He's great. He's still great.
He is back. He's got the Apple show, right? Apple is the one. Do you have Apple TV?
I do. I really like that show Severance.
Oh, I keep hearing that that's really good. That might be the thing between that and Jon Stewart. That might be the thing that gets me. I'm just like, I've hit the point, I'm sure we all have, where I'm just like, I can't keep up.
Oh, no.
With the list of shit I'm supposed to watch, even on the channels I'm or the you know, streamers I'm already subscribed to. Do I really need to go get fucking Apple or whatever the next one's going to be?
It's absolutely crazy. I'm like, I want like cable and my TV guide back.
Dude, you know? It's so funny how we've come full circle, right?
I do. I, you know, my mom used to get the TV guide, rock it with a highlighter on Sunday, like for the program she wanted through the week. It's the simple life, you know?
People are longing for that, man. The streamers are now, you know, testing at least. I don't know that anyone's made any final decisions, but like, a hot button conversation in my world is like binge release versus weekly schedule, right?
Sure.
And people trying to straddle the balance between the two, right? So you see stuff like, I'm a big Ozark guy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like it too. Oh,
God, I love it.
It's fun. Fun
is an interesting word. What they just did is, you know, they took a full season and they released it in two batches.
Right.
Untold, actually, Benny, which we've talked about, has done something similar, right? We made 10 films and Netflix kind of said, okay, here's the way we're going to do this. We're going to take 5 and 5. We're going to separate them out into 2 mini seasons. Mm. And then we're going to do weeklies within there. And it's this conversation about, you know, do we maximize the, oh God, here's a Zoom phrase, the press cycle of each episode. So that like when you put Malice at the Palace out, you get a week of just talking about Ron Artest and Jermaine O'Neal and all those dudes. And then a week later, we go, oh, okay, and here's Caitlyn Jenner. And then a week later, it's you know, Marty Fish or whatever. Or do you put them all out at once? So if someone falls in love with Malice at the Palace, they have 4 more hours of television to watch. I don't know what the answer
is. If the upside to week is the press cycle, what's the upside to the binge release?
I think the upside to the binge release is people have, I mean, first off, I should be clear that like smarter, better paid people make these decisions. I land on the receiving end and do as I'm told. But I think the thinking is that like, it is the hardest thing to do in my industry and arguably most industries right now is capture someone's attention for the first time, right? There are so many options available to you. And we're not even just talking about the streaming services anymore. We're talking about the 300 apps you have on your fucking phone. We're talking about the time with your kid. You're talking about your job. You're talking about your personal relationship. Right. All this shit that you could, if you have a free hour on a Tuesday night, you can do more things than ever in the history of civilization.
Yeah. So if you more get than like someone, a human mind has ever even conceived until
an
like
unhealthy
the last
amount,
10
a
years.
Really unhealthy amount. It's breaking all of our fucking brains.
Right. Yeah.
But in that ecosystem, which is the one we have at the moment, once you get someone in the door, you probably want to keep them there for as long as you can, because there's absolutely no guarantee that they'll come back next week because something else has captured their attention.
And the diminishing attention span that goes along with that.
That's exactly it. So I think that's the debate that happens between the two. And I don't know that there's a right answer.
Well, we just dealt with that with Gaslight Anthem. It's funny. Like, you know, we did this rollout, you know, like a 4-day, like, all right, 1 week we're going to scrub the socials. And then the next week, we're just going to put this box up. And then the next week, there's going to be like 4 days of like these little teaser videos and stuff. And, you know, it got to the point where, you know, I've stepped back from certain elements of this business for long enough and it's changed so much in the time I've stepped back. I'm kind of acquiescing to people who know more than me. You know, I used to really want to control this part of it.
Yeah.
And the artist in me is like, no, just fucking tell people. Like, this is what we're doing. And just tell people. But then I watch like this fucking dead Instagram account that we haven't used in years, all of a sudden has like 10,000 new people on it who are like discovering my band and like doing this stuff just because they're doing this cheesy rollout shit and it's getting.
So it worked.
What they wanted to do. And it probably brought in more people than it pissed off in the long run. Like, I don't know if that's true, but it's like they're, you know, I have friends who are telling me they can't get artists signed because their data isn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know, literally like that's the first thing a label is asking for now is data analytics. Like what is your online presence in numbers, you know? And
yeah,
what are bands supposed to do in that context? You know,
that's where it does feel like it's kind of the pendulum is swung too far, right?
Yeah, we need a course correction here.
Yeah. And look, it's the same thing. You know, this debate has roiled sports for the last decade or so is the rise of advanced analytics, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a bunch of really smart kind of, you know, math nerds. And then you have the guys like Charles Barkley on the post game show going, well, I don't know about this analytics bullshit, but he's got big thighs or whatever, right? Yeah. It's all about the eye test. Right. And like the answer is always somewhere in the middle. It's a little bit of Chuck's perspective and a little bit of the analytics.
Bill James is too far. Charles Barkley's too far.
100%, right? And if you can center it somewhere on that spectrum between the two, and it's probably the same for bands, right? Like, yeah, sure. It's hard to break through. So if you've got a good social game and a bit of a built-in following, that counts. But you also need to be able to write the fucking songs.
Right. Well, I think that's where the difference in like, because if there's a musician who is just trying to be a pop star, just trying to be an entertainer, then do whatever the fuck you have to do to get as many eyes on you as possible. That's your mission. That is your goal. And, you know, but there's another side to the arts, which, you know, for someone like us, like, sure, like a TikTok account will probably add more analytical views or, you know, contribute to our data in a good way. But do people want to see 40-year-old guys and bands making TikToks at home when they got like little kids and like are cooking breakfast? Total bullshit, you know, like. So I'm not Machine Gun Kelly. I'm not like wearing a cape like Travis Barker. You don't want to see me at home. And
isn't Travis Barker older than all of us, by the way?
Dude, let's not even get into that. Because the fact that a dude with a Dag Nasty tattoo is doing the things he's doing is driving me up a fucking wall, Ryan. I don't like it.
Yeah, I can't say I'm a fan.
I don't like it.
Wait, but so where did you land on that? Like, so there's someone, I assume there's someone outside of the band who has suggested kind of the cadence of this rollout to you and all of this.
It's a management office, like, yeah.
Yeah, for sure, as well it should be. Where do you land on how you draw the line? Like, does Gaslight have a TikTok now?
It does not. And I think that's where, like, you can't judge everyone on the same line. You know, it's like we maybe aged into it without having to do TikTok. You know what I mean? Like we created enough prior to TikTok that we're not forced to do it. But I do think there's an element of like you talked about before, the differences of when you're 20 and when you're 30 and when you're 40. And, you know, we're getting things back together and I want to enjoy my life. And one of the things I realize I need to do to enjoy my life is to seize some of the control. It's like, you know, I used to really, really put such a fine tooth comb on like every venue we're going to, every piece of social media that came out, every little thing, you know, hyper micromanage these things. And I'm going into it this time and I'm like, you know what? I can control music. I can control the relationship with my band. I can control art. I can control how we present this and how we present ourselves. And outside of that, you know what? I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I need to be honest about that. And there are all these people, you know what? They went to school. They roll out these bands. They do it every day. This is their life. I should probably believe them, you know, like, and just be like, okay, there's a reason you fucking hire these people. Like, do the thing you were supposed to do.
Trust and delegation. But do you think, though, like, I actually doubt that that's entirely true. I bet you do know that. And if you didn't have, if Gaslight wasn't as successful as it has been, and you didn't have this apparatus around you where you could kind of delegate these things to specialists, as it were, I bet you could do that. But isn't your decision-making rationale a little bit more that, like, well, I guess I could spend 3 hours vetting the venue that we're playing in Washington State or whatever, but, like, I'm going to spend time with my fucking kids. Like, isn't it a priorities thing for you now?
Yeah.
More than, like, a specialization thing?
Yeah, I think so. I guess that makes sense. Yeah, maybe. It's just, like, where you want to put your time. But then, yeah, but there is also wisdom. There's wisdom in letting it go. You know?
Yes. Oh God. Like, yeah, dude.
You know, like, you can't, and looking back into the path of Gaslight, if there's anything, I don't regret a thing, but if there's anything I wish my old ass could tell my young ass, was to keep your eyes down. Enjoy the fucking show.
Yeah.
Enjoy the night. Enjoy the people around you. And the thing you're stressed about in fucking Kansas City tomorrow is going to work out. Like, you'll sort it out when you get there, but keep your eyes down and enjoy the actual experience. And, you know, once you hit 40, it's a fucking miracle. You don't die of cancer every day. So I want to enjoy it.
From your lips to God's ears, dude. I mean, that is that single pearl of wisdom of, like, hey man, how about you just kind of, like, live in the moment, right? That we have 500 different ways to communicate that idea in our society, because it is probably the most overarching relevant truth that one person could say to another, which is, like, whatever you're worrying about that you did that felt stupid yesterday, whatever problem you think is on the horizon that's going to come tomorrow, it'll either come or it won't, and it happened right, or it didn't, but all you can control is what happens today and how much you enjoy that and whatever. But, like, holy shit, man. I mean, I struggle with that every single day.
I mean, I was just going to ask that because, like, you, I mean, I've seen some of the stuff. I'm even, you know, I'm watching old episodes of Now What last night.
Oh, wow.
And
Jesus.
I mean, they're great. They're great. But, you know, I'm in this place and I see you in Liberia and in these places where you're just staring in the face of as an American, like you and I growing up in Central and North Jersey. It's so inconceivable. Like, you know, how much is, like, the path you took, you know, just, like, really permanently altered the way you see things? Like has seeing all this made it simpler or more complicated?
Oh God, great framing of that question. I actually think the answer is simpler, right? In the sense that it's a clarifying lens. I do think, and this is a position of the deepest privilege. I really do mean that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that travel is one of the best things. I mean, you know it. Yeah. You know it from being in a band. Like, travel is one of the best things you can do in kind of shaping your worldview. And the reason I say it is simplified things is it is the source of perspective. Yeah. And I do feel like it is, by and large, a lot of our differences, our conflicts, our failures as people, and I still have a shit ton of them, come from a lack of perspective, mm-hmm. and just losing track of the bigger picture, losing track of the moment, losing track of what matters, micromanaging a venue selection outside of Seattle, whatever it may be. Right, we all have these things, right?
Yeah.
And if you have accumulated enough life experience to know that, like, and this sounds so trite, dude, but I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah. Like, yeah, actually, it doesn't matter. Like, I was on a Zoom call this morning about the song that rolls over the title credits of a two-part documentary I directed last year that's going to air this summer. Right. And it's like, we spent a long time talking about it, and it does matter to me. I worked really fucking hard on this, and this is, like, the final mood that you'll be left with.
Right.
At the same time, if someone has arrived on the credit sequence of this 2-hour documentary, like yeah. I've kind of won the war.
You had him now already. I'm like, yeah, you got him.
Yeah, yeah, you got him. I'm good. Yeah. And like, it's hard to like reconcile that yeah. sometimes yeah. with like the knowledge that like, yeah, actually in Liberia, you know, people don't have electricity. People don't have clean energy to prepare their dinner tonight. And again, I know this sounds so trite, and I'm sitting here belaboring my choice and getting all worked up about like whether we have the budget to license this cover of You Are My Sunshine that I really want. Like, it's patently absurd.
It sounds
and
pricey.
Sometimes you
sounds
just pricey. Need to say, yeah, it is fucking pricey. It's not in public domain yet.
I can imagine.
But anyway, so I think that all of that travel, I mean, how do you feel? You've traveled the world as much as I have, if not more so. Like, how does that impact your day-to-day now when you're New Jersey dad, Benny? Like, I imagine it still does, right?
Yeah, I think it's huge. Just as far as what you said, like, I think so much of the difficulty people have is plain and simple empathy. Just yeah. the simple ability to be able to see yourself in someone else's shoes. And that's like my utopian dream of what social media could actually maybe do and some sort of global society can do. If like you're seeing all these plights all the time, maybe it'll help. But so yeah, and I feel resentment when I see like a conservative who has never left like their little corner of their little town and their little state trying to fucking tell me what the world should look like.
Tears.
Like, get the fuck off your ass and see the world, and then you have a right to tell me that. But you can't tell me that from fucking Western Indiana in your gaming chair or something, you know? That shit pisses me off.
I think I'm all good on Marjorie Taylor Greene perspectives on the conflict in Ukraine.
Yeah.
I'm all set, Marjorie, fine. Actually. Fine. We're good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I might as well call like Coolio. Like, it's just like...
Dude, I'd rather. I would be happy yeah. to hear what Coolio had to say.
So on that subject, though, the thing interests me, you know, I know you've talked about going to North Korea a bunch of times. It's a really interesting and crazy story, of course. But the one part about the story that really got me, and I'm fascinated with China because of the same construct, is you told me like the effect that people had, or the effect on the room when they knew Kim Jong-un was going to walk in, and then like what came over people when this person came into the room and like, and overcome with some like huge emotion that they weren't expecting and saw. And it always makes me think like, you know, we think we know all this stuff, but on the smaller level, are they just as happy? Like, you've seen it, like you've been there firsthand, like on a day-to-day basis, are they just as happy?
I mean, so here's the fucking crazy, God, this is another 2 hours of conversation.
Oh, we're definitely having to do a round two of this. I got
well, because here's the thing, dude. Part of what you're getting at is actually this like there's a couple things, but part of it is this unbelievably timely debate that I think we're having as a civilization, especially if you kind of, you know, throw your lot in with like the Ben Rhodes types and you understand a lot of the conflict in the world as autocracy versus democracy, mm-hmm. right? And this mm-hmm. idea of like the single authoritarian leader and this broader rise of populism and the populist demagogue that we've certainly seen around the world. Although some would make the case that kind of the tide is it ebbing or flowing? What's receding? Ebbing or flowing? Ebbing? Flowing. Ebbing.
Brad, were you raised on the sea?
I was not raised on the sea. I wish
the tide is receding, right? The wave of populism sure. is receding, yeah, yeah. Some would say. Whatever. It's all a tangential thing. but that's a little part of the question, right? Is like, is the messy mechanism of democracy better suited for human happiness? Or is there something about us and the way that we're wired that actually does crave a strong man leader, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I certainly fucking hope not.
Right.
But like there are some data points around the world that make you wonder if like there are ways that there's something within us that is being manipulated to suggest as much, and it's really scary because it's generally manipulated by people with the worst of ambitions.
Right.
But the Kim Jong-un thing is really interesting, right? Because one of the reasons that I there's a zillion reasons I can't fully answer your very smart question. One of them is I, to this day, 10 years later, whenever it was that I was there, 9 years, 8 years ago, I don't know if those people were authentically feeling the thing that they were showing me. Mm. What they were showing me, what Benny is alluding to, is the end of an episode of the Vice on HBO show where Kim Jong-un walks into a basketball stadium where Dennis Rodman and I are playing in a basketball
the
game.
The Globetrotters.
That's a thing that happened with the Globetrotters, yeah. Right, of course. I scored 2 points. always like to get that mention in there. I did hit a layup.
Open layup? Contested?
It was a pretty open layup, dude. Okay. It was a Globetrotters game, you know. But Kim Jong-un walks into the stadium, this full packed stadium of North Koreans in Pyongyang, and the stadium, I don't even have words for it. Erupts, I guess, is the word you would use. But it's you know, I'm going to a Clippers game tomorrow night, and like the stadium will erupt if Paul George hits a three. Like that's not the level of this, right?
It's like this is kind of eruption,
a breathless, crying, fanatical demonstration of what would seem to be affection and joy,
right.
But which could be abject terror. It could literally be either one of those polar extremes, and I have no way of knowing, right? The striking thing about North Korea was like, you know, your reference point in modern history, I guess, for that kind of society, that kind of hermit kingdom is, you know, the Soviet Union. As I understand it, I never visited the Soviet Union before its collapse. As I understand it, you could find the pockets of dissidents. You could find the dissent. There were fractures. And maybe that's not always the case. Maybe that comes in the later stage before a crack up, and maybe it'll happen in North Korea. I could not find the dissent.
Right.
I could not find the parts of North Korea that were not a part of the pantomime show that I was
like
I
Soviet was Union as metal bands. Like,
there's always something, right? There's always this like little breakage where you see in a crack and you're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, right.
And there's some way to relate. But then again, I will say like, that was one of the, this is going to sound really cheesy, but like one of the really cool things about being there with the Globetrotters, you know, the whole idea was this like kind of basketball diplomacy, sports diplomacy, the idea that like sports can be a global language, you know? And I ended up making this whole show kind of based on this idea. After I left Vice, I made a show for Netflix called Home Game, where basically we just went around the world and kind of did that whole thing, right? In the same way that Bourdain used food to bridge cultures, we used sports, and we looked at local games in every culture and the way they were kind of different and the same and all of this. And it was really interesting because there is that idea that like even in North Korea, which is the most remote and different and foreign place that I will ever be in my life, any of us will ever be.
By far the biggest culture shock, like of all the places.
By far.
Like, not even close.
Look, we woke up every day and literal propaganda is playing from the speakers on the streets, right? Like you are being delivered the state-run newspaper under the door in your hotel room, and that state-run newspaper is telling you that North Korea is under siege and at war with the West, and the American soldiers are coming and they're coming to eat your babies.
Wow.
Like that is the reporting. And you're reading this as the American in Pyongyang, and it's so wild. But even with that, even within those constructs, sports can kind of do it. And again, I know it's cheesy, but like, and it's not just sports. It's music, certainly.
Yeah.
It's sports, it's food, right? It's all these things, these cultural cultural red threads that we have that are like really just, it's so encouraging that at the end of the day, despite all of the difference and all the division and all these news reports about, you know, the Americans eating your babies, like, it's really cool to watch someone dunk a basketball. Yeah. That's fucking cool. That's really fun.
And a guy who claimed to break his dick three times is the one who fucking broke down the barrier. It's so bizarre.
I know.
It really is. Like that connection and those people. It's just like sometimes when I look up from like the TV or computer and I'm like, wait, what kind of fuck? What is the Matrix doing right now? Because this is weird, you know.
I know. It really does. It pushes your belief that we're actually operating in something other than a simulation. That someone's just having a fucking laugh at our expense.
It's so bizarre. And then did I also hear that they played the some musicians played the Dallas theme song?
All right, here's my best fucking guess.
An orchestra or like?
It was after that game. So basically we had been there for the better part of a week and we had kind of, you know, we were angling to see Kim Jong-un and we went at the time, I should say, like we went shortly after the transition in power. So Kim Jong-un, I mean, he's still relatively unknown quantity,
right?
But at the time was a dramatically unknown,
right?
He was 30, he was 31, he went to the Swiss boarding school. That's the only kind of thing. And from that Swiss boarding school experience, which is rare in that country, certainly, there was this like little crack where we knew that he had this affinity for basketball, and in particular, he had this affinity for Michael Jordan in the 90s Bulls, and that was kind of the in. And that's
so he was in his boarding school when the Bulls were on their run.
Yeah, he grew up with it. That was the piece of culture he latched onto. He became to hear people tell it. It's not like I've seen it, but he became an avid shoe collector, right?
And that's shoehead, like sneakerhead.
Yeah, he's a sneakerhead.
I bet he was like a Horace Grant fan too, or something like a deep cut, like a BJ Armstrong guy,
Luke Longley guy. But so anyway, that was how Rodman became kind of our Trojan horse to get us in there. But so all of that is just background and context. And we're there and we had gone to see Kim Jong-un because he is this new leader of the Hermit Kingdom. And he's this unknown quantity. He's just taken over power as his father has just passed. So we were angling to see him the whole time.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some optimism at this point, right? Like the fact that he went to that boarding school and the fact that he was young, like there was some optimism that he was going to be like a different kind of leader, right?
There was. Yeah. It's hard. It's such a good point. There was a little bit. There was
like a sliver. There's a chance.
Yeah, just a sliver, yeah. Right? It just the changing of the guard moment.
Right.
Someone who had a cultural touchstone and had a connection to the wider world that you could certainly argue his father and his grandfather did not. That is not the case, obviously, as we have seen since. But so the whole trip was kind of angled around hoping to see him in this game that was kind of at the tail end of our trip is when he eventually walked in and he had that great isn't the word I was looking for there, but that kind of awe-inspiring reception of the standing ovation, 8 minutes, people crying, all this stuff. After that, he invited us all back to this big, palace, I guess, for lack of a better word, to have this big banquet and meal. And even that, you're disassociating because you know that the vast majority of the country, not the one that you are seeing, but you know, the outside of Pyongyang, outside of the places you are being shown, is starving, right?
Right.
Experiencing poverty, widespread famine, and they're trotting out this 7-course meal for you and sushi and all this stuff. But the musical performance, this is a long answer to a very simple question. I'm so sorry.
No, it's so
the musical
please.
Performance was a all female orchestra, all dressed in white, that was kind of this like string band and pop singing amalgam or whatever. And they, for some reason, were dead set on just the Dallas theme song over and over and over again.
Like,
I must have heard, dude, must have heard it 20 fucking times, but playing it live, not like recording it, playing it. The only thing I've been able to, I couldn't for the life of me figure out, like, what do they think Dallas is like still on TV?
Right,
and
right.
Like, it's Dennis Rodman is from Dallas, like the actual city, Dallas, Texas. So I think something got lost in the translation there of like, this is the anthem for people from Texas. That's my best
the
guess.
National
I have
anthem
no
of
idea
Dallas.
To this thing. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that you're probably right. I mean, why else would they play it 25 times? I wonder if they were like super disappointed he didn't like recognize it. Like they thought, like he's got, oh, we're playing the Dallas song for him. He's going to love it. And I can't imagine Rodman was big Dallas fishing.
No, I don't think it resonated for him whatsoever.
He didn't worry about who killed JR. That's so that is such a bizarre part of it. I have so much more, and that was so fast. Brad, are you up for two of these?
Yeah.
I think we got to do another one.
I would be happy to anytime.
We didn't do Malice in the Palace. We didn't do Rick Ankiel. I got all these questions about like traveling and the craziest drugs and food you took. Like, we got a lot to go. So I think we should do another one.
It would be my pleasure
to
do another one at any time. And I'm sure you have a long list of guests who want to be on the show. So I appreciate it very much. And I am happy to do it whenever, sooner or later or whatever. If you want to take a little break from my bullshit, we'll reconvene in a few months or whatever.
Definitely
but
not bullshit.
Thank you so much.
No, it's so much fun to talk, man. I'm glad we actually got to like talk.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen, I don't think that guy broke his dick 3 times. I just don't. It doesn't make sense.
It is a real injury, supposedly. I didn't have it happen, but I know somebody that it happened to, and I looked it up after they told me.
Wait, but it's got to be considered like a sprain, though, right? Because there's no bones.
I don't remember. You'll have to look it up, dude. It's a thing. It's a thing. That happens.
I don't want to talk too much shit about it because
I don't really want to talk
about it.
I'll
probably break my dick if I talk about this too much. Yeah. But Rodman, I mean, what a bizarre. It's like.
It is really bizarre.
It's so bizarre. And there were these little questions about, like, because, like, the Kim Jong-un, I'm like, I heard an interview with Ryan where they were like, what were his hands like? And they were just like baby soft, you know? Cause like he's never done, like, I imagine his life is like a Prince Akeem in Coming to America.
Yeah.
You know, he like wakes up, he gets the royal penis cleaned.
Yeah.
He steps on rose petals and like the whole deal. It's just such a bizarre. And, you know, I see these like fairly recently I was at a Brooklyn Nets outdoor thing at Brooklyn Bridge Park. And part of the people who were there were like Chinese basketball players. Like, I guess they were on like a US tour, like doing right. clinics or like something. And they were at this thing. And there's this group of like very tall, you know, fit young Chinese guys who right. are, you know, basketball players. And, you know, like, I am fascinated with this concept. I'm watching these guys and I'm like, you're just raised in such a vastly different scenario than me. And we're raised in this idea that like ours is good and theirs is bad. And we've been on this like 200 year journey of trying to prove to everyone ours is better. And like, I see these kids and I'm like, I don't know, like they look healthy. They look happy. They're fine. They all got phones or talking to each other. It's not like they came out of some thing and they're all like, you know, fucking jumping in the river for food or something, like, you know. And I just see things like that. And you gotta like, you know, I'm like, the perception of each in each place is just so far off. And when you strip it all back, it's just these fucking people. Mm-hmm. And what actually makes people happy? Like, what is the thing that leads us to a better society? I mean, in China, they have posters all over the place saying how shitty our democracy is because nothing ever gets done. You know, they're just yeah. like, yeah, they just fight with each other all the time. And then that's why they suck, because they never do anything. And I hear that. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. Kind of true. Things take a long time here, you know, like, and bizarrely, some like autocratic nation is probably going to lead the charge in like, in the environment, in something like that, because we can never make a damn decision.
Could be, yeah.
You know, absolutely. And we can never like move. And if one of these autocratic leaders is just like, well, I'm going to focus this entire thing on this, no one has a fucking choice. And we saw it kind of, you know, play out in a bizarre way during COVID, where like in some ways these places that are just used to being told what to do were able to respond better. Yeah. It's a truly bizarre thing that I'm sort of just wrapping my head around. This is not coming from like some point of expertise. I've never been to China. I've never been to a communist country. I've never seen the insides of this, but I'm kind of fascinated by it. I think this is my Wikipedia wormhole territory for like the next couple months. It's like somewhere around here.
It's a deep one.
There's a lot to it.
Democracy is a slow and convoluted process. It's true. Hitler made the trains run on time, they say, you know, so.
I think it was Mussolini who did that.
Oh, it was Mussolini. All right.
I believe so. Okay. One of those shit heels. I was saying that to my friend Neil today. I'm listening to the new Dan Carlin podcast, The Hardcore History, mm-hmm. which is super fun, 6 hours on the Atlantic slave trade.
Yeah, it's great. It's just so goddamn long.
You know what I realized listening to the last one on the Atlantic slave trade is, why do the Portuguese and the Dutch get such a free pass? Seriously, we talk about like, you know, worldwide imperialism and colonialism and all the awful things people have done. It was hundreds of years of the Portuguese and Dutch.
Yeah.
They don't take any shit for it now. No one's going to Holland being like, ugh, what did you fuckers did to like the Caribbean islands?
They're
like,
too small. They're too small. Nobody cares. They're not wielding any power now. Like,
but they did. They were these tiny little countries that wielded their white power like all over the fucking place.
And now
place.
They're small countries that don't have, you know, nuclear weapons and aren't running around telling other people what to do.
So that's why we don't chip them down anymore?
That's why we get, this shit is focused on the big ones and us. And,
like, you know, you don't ever walk through Little Italy and go, hey, you fuckers were just Nazis. No? Happens to me.
Yeah, no. Maybe Bensonhurst. I'll try it there.
Okay. Bensonhurst. All right, let's get, I'm going to get in trouble if we keep going down this rabbit hole. I'm going to
say something. Anyways, Ryan Duffy, if you didn't know who he was before, there's a wormhole for you. There's plenty. He's got the new show on Netflix that you can check out. What's the name of that show, Benny?
Untold.
And just go down a wormhole with his Vice stuff, because it's all really good. It's really well done. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
You can follow him on Instagram at Ryan Duffy. And
I quite like that Now What series too. Just this idea of like, okay, these are the problems. What are we going to do about it? You know, like they love, maybe that's the punk rocker in there. Like, let's find some solutions.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, if you find anything from Untold, Home Game, The Truth Be Told, the Rick Ankiel one, you know, the Vice stuff, Now What, like all of it, it's so fascinating. You could spend a good, your next 10 hours following Ryan around the world and then listening to cool shit.
And you learn something.
Please do it. And honestly, just a fascinating guy to talk to. I could have hung up that interview and just kept talking to him for pleasure, you know?
Yeah,
so I do think we're going to have a round two coming up because there was just so much stuff I still wanted to get into.
It's got more
but
to
thanks
say.
To Ryan for coming on. Thanks to all you for listening. As Ryan said, we're this deep into the podcast. If you made it here, we probably got you.
So then you can join our Patreon. Patreon.com/goingofftrack. As you may have noticed, our show now has some advertisements on it. I'm sorry for that. We've gone a long fucking time without them, though. So
it's true. 400 episodes without them.
And you can still go back and listen to our legacy episodes. They don't have ads on them. But if you want ad-free experience and a lot of other stuff, you can go to patreon.com/goingofftrack and join the team. There's bonus material, you get ad-free RSS feed, and you can join us for to tell us what you hate about the show on Discord every Thursday night.
Sure. That's the best part.
Leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
And are you requesting the reviews to be like
honest?
What, like G-rated?
Purely
you
honest.
You prefer G-rated, don't
come,
you?
Let them come from your heart.
Let them come from your heart, Brad? Stop it. You're bad.
You're a filthy man, Benny.
You know what's funny? You know what I love about you and I, Brad? We're about to cut out of this podcast, and we didn't even mention it's our 400th one.
Oh! Oh, my God. It's like,
we're the worst. We're the fucking worst. No wonder.
It's like my wedding anniversary. I always forget.
No small wonder, me and you. Look at this.
Benny, congratulations for making it this far.
Thank you. You too. You actually did all 400. Good for you.